The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
It's the custom here at IMC to give, on the Martin Luther King Day, to give a talk on Martin Luther King in honor of him. And But I kind of got my wires crossed, and I set up that I was going to do this series of talks on concentration. And so I think I'll say to keep the course with the concentration talk. So if some of you are expecting a talk on Martin Luther King, sorry. So this then is the second talk on this series on concentration. One of the really kind of pithy quotes from the Buddha about concentration. He says, cultivate concentration, develop your concentration, for when the mind is concentrated, you'll see how things are. So approximately that was a quote. So develop concentration. When you have concentrated, you see how things are. And this is one of the great goals of Buddhist practice, is to have develop a kind of clarity of mind that we can see our life with great clarity. We can really see deeply into our life, and so that we can see things as they are. And in Buddhism, the idea of seeing things as they are is sometimes connected to seeing very deeply how the Four Noble Truths work in our lives, to really understand very deeply in the kind of the deep recesses of our psyche, the working of clinging, grasping, attachment, and the possibility of releasing that and freeing that. And that's kind of the definition of one of the definitions of seeing things as they are. And so concentration practice creates the stillness, the stability, the clarity that allows us to see clearly, see how things are. The one of the last week I talked about translating the Sanskrit Pali word samadhi not as concentration but rather as composure. Another kind of way I like to talk about it, which makes a point, is to talk about becoming concentric as opposed to eccentric. Eccentric apparently means to be off-center, outside the center, outside of yourself. Whereas concentric, if that's the opposite, would be centered on yourself, with the center. And so to develop ability to be centered, not just here, but even more important, to be centered here and now. To be able to have the mind still and stable, focusing on something that's happening in the present moment. And what many people will discover when they meditate, probably all of you, is that the mind has a very strong tendency to wander off in thought. And where it often wanders in anywhere but here and now. It goes to there and then, or, you know, there and sometime. And so to stabilize the mind is to stabilize the mind here and now, so it stays right here, it rests here. It's a beautiful image I like for this idea of a stable, still mind that's really kind of at rest here, is that of a big bowl. Take a really large bowl, and maybe it's not too steep, the sides, and you cast a marble into it. The marble will go around and around and around, up and down, slowing down, and finally when all the momentum is out of the marble, it'll rest at the bottom of the bowl. So if the present moment is the bottom of the bowl, then the mind is like a marble, and it goes this way and that way and reacts to this and spins round and around. But as it settles, at some point it comes to rest. It doesn't go to sleep. A concentrated mind is very alert, very present, but it's also at rest. And so it's kind of at rest in the present moment, alert and present. So today I want to talk a little bit about some of the things to know about becoming concentrated, developing states of concentration. And one of the important things to know is that it's best not to think you're going to do a frontal assault on getting concentrated. It's more that the state of concentration that Buddhism talks about is a state that is best seen as, I think it's best seen as, especially for, anyway, best seen as a gift that we create the conditions for. And a lot of our job is to create the proper conditions so the mind can come to rest in this alert way. The mind can be focused and stable here. And so there's a variety of conditions that that we put in place in order for it to happen. And then when all those conditions are properly in place, then it becomes relatively easy for the mind to settle. So one of the most important conditions for developing this concentration states is to live an ethical life. This is emphasized over and over again in Buddhism because, be ethical, importance to be ethical is so you don't harm anyone, but also it agitates the mind to be unethical. It's very hard for the mind to rest. There's a lot of, it can be remorse, there can be agitation, there can be fear, there can be all kinds of kind of mind spinning when our conscience is not settled. And so to live ethically is to have a clear and settled conscience. And with that, it's easier than, all kinds of things are easier. It's easier to sleep. But it's also easier to let the mind settle into the bottom of the bowl, to come to rest here. And so that's one of the conditions. I remember once going on retreat after I did something that hurt some other folks. And boy, was I not concentrated during that retreat. My mind was kind of just really churning away at what I'd done and who had hurt and what I needed to do. And, you know, I was never going to do that again. And there was something about being on retreat that allowed me to see the impact, the consequences, the karmic consequences of my actions much more clearly than I had, you know, going about my daily life where you get distracted and don't think about it. So it was a really powerful lesson how important it is to be ethical. A concentrated mind is a mind that is, in some ways, it's ordered. It's kind of like settled, it's clear, it's ordered. Orderly mind. It's not chaotic mind. And so it's said that it's helpful to live in an orderly space when you're cultivating concentration. So if you go, if you have a room where you're going to meditate in, that you make the room orderly so that you feel settled, you don't feel agitated being in there. If the room's a mess, you know, you sit down and you kind of like it, it kind of, I think it supports the agitation of the mind. But it also, doesn't give the mind the lesson. It doesn't give the mind the atmosphere of being ordered, of being settled, of being clear and being clean. So the ancient books talk about keeping an orderly, clean room or space to do your meditation in, if that's what you want to do. They also talk about having clean clothes. So, so put on clean clothes when you're going to get concentrated. Nice, clean clothes. You know, it kind of creates a different atmosphere, a different feeling. It kind of lifts the spirits a little bit, sometimes, maybe not much, but to put on clean clothes, you know, take a shower, put on the clean clothes, and you know. So it helps, there are three attitudes which are helpful to cultivate if you want to develop a concentrated mind. One of them is inspiration, to be inspired, or to be enthusiastic, or to be kind of gladdened or made happy by the idea and the practice of engaging in concentration. So if concentration is just a chore, if it's something that you feel like you need to do so you can, get a few stripes on your shoulder for being a good meditator. If it's competitive concentration practice, I've practiced competitive concentration. someone's sitting near me, and you know, well, I'm going to get concentrated before them. Doesn't work so well. I remember once in Burma, someone got pretty deeply concentrated And somehow the teacher was impressed and said something in front of everybody about this person being deeply concentrated. And this other person I knew came to me and kind of huffed and said, I knew that person back in Berkeley. No way. No way. You know, he was, I think he was jealous or, I don't know, offended or something. So so to be inspired, gladdened, is a word, pamoja in Pali, to be gladdened by the idea of concentration, the practice of it. So when we come to it, it's some, just the idea of it makes us happy. And I've felt this, and I've known people who feel this, to be gladdened and happy just to have the opportunity to practice. It's a pretty special thing for you and for the world that you even get to sit down to practice, independent of getting concentrated. It's a noble and beautiful endeavor. And just to be sit down and just make, kind of be happy or content that you get to do this. So be inspired. One of the great inspirations for me that stayed with me for years, there are all kinds of kind of things that inspired me in my concentration practice, but mentioned two of them. One of them was being in Burma, meditating in Burma at a center called the Mahasi Center. It's a very large meditation center there. That kind of when I first walked into the campus, this monastery, to me it looked like a junior college, community college campus in California someplace. It was very quite large buildings and walkways, and they sometimes have, I think, up to 4,000 or 5,000 people meditating in this big monastery. During vacation times, people would go there and be kind of a lot of people meditating. And they had a very large dining hall for women. The men and women were kept separate, kind of. And so the women ate in one building and the men ate in another. And that's very, And then they had this meditation hall for the women as well. And every day when I went to the men's dining room to eat, I had to walk by the women's meditation building. And it was a very large building that had open sides on two sides. The doors were kind of big, lots of, there's a series of doors that were all open, and you know, Burma's a hot place. So the doors were kept, you know, both sides are quite open. And there were probably 500 women meditating in there. And they're all sitting in very orderly, neat rows. And they're all sitting up very straight. Straight, proud, and tall was the kind of thing. And they sat so still. And it was like a sight of nature. I mean, it's kind of an awesome thing for me every morning to go by and see these 500 or several hundred women sitting very still, very upright, very dignified. And that stillness and dignity was so inspiring for me in my own practice. And I carried with me that image for many, many years. And the other thing that has inspires me, image or sense, feeling sense, that inspires me is meditating sometimes in the monasteries, sometimes in the jungles of Thailand or the monastery in Burma, and meditating alone and everything getting really still and quiet. Just kind of this, I mean, not that there were sounds like those around. In Burma, there were all these loudspeakers all the time. I mean, it was amazing, the loudspeakers. And I don't think there's a quiet monastery in Southeast Asia. They all have neighborhood loudspeakers blaring away, and they're poor quality loudspeakers. But there was this to feel this kind of stillness or quiet. I guess in me, around me, was something like I don't know. It's like satin or like something very precious. That inspires me. So that's one quality that's helpful to have, to be inspired, to be gladdened. Another is to be confident. So to be confident in a variety of things, it's helpful to be confident in knowing what the practice is. So to know something about the practice of concentration, how it's done, what you expect when you do it. So to have confidence in the practice, to have confidence in the path of concentration, how it unfolds, and to have confidence in yourself, to feel, yes, this is something I can do. So to cultivate confidence. The third is to have respect. I actually like the word reverence. To have a sense of respect or reverence for what you're about to do as well. Do not approach it with an acquisitive mind or greedy mind or demanding or a lot of expectation, but have more of a sense that Dharma willing, I'll get concentrated. It's not, I'll do my effort, I'll put the conditions into place, but I'm not going to be the one who, it's not up to me, Dharma willing kind of attitude. And this is a very special thing. It's a sacred thing to enter into the temple of samadhi. And so we want to do with some sense of, I think, some respect or reverence for the whole phenomenon, for yourself doing it. And then the last attitude is that of patience. A lot of patience. Infinite patience. If you want to develop samadhi states, it's best to be infinitely patient so that in that infinite patient, you become quite content to just be. Quite content just to be as you are. Content with what's happening. Maybe that should be the fifth quality. Cultivate contentment. Be content. Be content with just breathing. Be content with just being. Be content with, with your life as best you can. In the Buddha's teaching, he put a lot of emphasis on contentment. Cultivating contentment with the things that you have. Monastics are not supposed to be deprived people. Monastic people are supposed to have just enough so they can be content just to be alive. So just enough clothes, just enough food, just enough housing, and just enough medicine. From our point of view, they look pretty poor. But the idea is it's not supposed to be an ascetic lifestyle, it's not supposed to be a deprived lifestyle, but a lifestyle that is just enough so that you can practice well, so you can be content with what you have and engage. The So one of the things that's also helpful for developing concentration is to not be in the not be seduced by your thinking. Not be, not give a lot of emphasis to your thinking. Don't invest yourself in your thinking. Don't somehow think that thinking is where it's at. There has to be a disinvestment from the world of thinking. There has to be a disinterest in the world of thinking, discursive thinking. And that's a very hard lesson for some people to learn. Because of the, some people, they think they are their thinking. They're so closely identified with thinking that if they stop thinking, it's frightening because then who are they? They're going to disappear. Thinking is how we make ourselves safe in the world. So to put our thinking to rest can seem like a very threatening thing because then how are we going to take care of ourselves? But as long as we're in the grip of thinking and thinking about things, it's not possible for the mind to settle. Thinking is a little bit like having the marble spinning. And so it's hard to have thinking stop, but what's required is at least to know the principle, know the idea that thinking is not the solution when you're doing meditation. And so at least you're convinced enough. Your mind might not be convinced, but you're convinced that the way forward is not through thinking. Because unless you're really clear about that, chances are you'll slip into thoughts over and over again. So there has to be a real kind of stepping back, like disinvesting. Don't grant a lot of authority to your thoughts. And so the thoughts can begin to recede in the background. There's no switch for turning them off automatically. They get quieter and weaker over time. They recede to the background. They no longer have center stage. And when the thinking no longer has center stage, it allows something else to have center stage, which is the object of focus for concentration practice, what we're kind of gathering ourselves around, focusing on. So this disinvestment of thinking is very important. The Buddha put a tremendous amount of emphasis that in order to that a condition for developing concentration is to abandon what he called the five hindrances. And the five hindrances must be what he thought were the primary mental preoccupations that interfere with the mind getting concentrated, interfere with the mind kind of being at rest and settled. It's the five preoccupations that keeps the marble spinning around and around, getting caught up. And so these have to be settled. In the Buddha's language, they have to be abandoned. We have to abandon our interest, our involvement with these things. So the five hindrances, first one is greed. There's two different words that are used for this in the ancient world. Sometimes they talk about sensual desire, but sometimes they use the word greed for the first of the five hindrances. So this kind of desire, really strong desire, longing, wanting something. And the mind can get caught up very powerfully into the world of wanting. The other is, second, is ill will. Sometimes called in English aversion, but ill will. And hostility, thoughts of anger, hostility, or pushing things away, or averse, kind of being an aversive mind. And this is very mind, the mind is caught up in that, and is looking around or thinking aversive thoughts. And so it can't settle. The third is, it's called, we're stuck with this in English, Buddhist English. In Buddhist English, it's called sloth and torpor. I think most of us don't go around using the word sloth and torpor too often. But sloth and torpor is not ordinary sleepiness and tiredness, but it's a kind of lethargy. And that comes from resistance, lethargy that comes from an evaluation of the situation, conscious or unconscious. And so kind of our energy gets drained. And it's kind of like we might have plenty of reservoirs of energy within us, but we're kind of like so discouraged or dismayed or something that things just drain away. We don't have the energy, enthusiasm. And then the fourth is restlessness and remorse. So here, remorse or regret is very important. It's important. Why it points to the importance of being ethical. And restlessness or agitation is just a lot of energy, a lot of spinning, churning away, and like you've had too much caffeine. I've tried to meditate on too much caffeine, and that didn't work well for me. So the fifth of the hindrances is doubt. They say doubt is the most dangerous one. And doubt is doubt yourself, doubt the practice, doubt the teachings, doubt the teacher, doubt this is the right time to practice, just kind of vacillation, inability to commit to being here and doing the practice. So these five states, these five kind of activities of the mind, the Buddha says should be abandoned. So we abandon sensual desire while we meditate. We abandon greed. We abandon ill will. We abandon sloth and torpor. We abandon our resistance and our lethargy, and we abandon restlessness. We abandon doubt, so that the marble isn't spinning so much. But then something very interesting happens. When the mind is no longer caught up in thought, when the mind is no longer caught up in the five hindrances and desire and ill will. Then at some point there's a tipping point that happens, so that the mind then begins to settle or begins to concentrate on its own. It's not something that we have to do so much anymore, but more like now the conditions are in place, that the mind, the unfolding, the deepening, the settling of the mind can unfold on its own. And so at this point, the focus on concentration practice is very much on being receptive, being open, dwelling, relaxing into the experience. Sometimes when the hindrances are really strong, you have to put a lot of effort not to be caught by the hindrances. But when their pull weakens enough, then the practice becomes more a receptive practice. For me, I love the idea of allowing. That when I do concentration practice, do my meditation practice, a sense of allowing experience to show itself, and kind of allowing things to be there. Kind of for me, it's a feeling of opening and making space for things, and letting things just come and surface and be, to let things be and show themselves, to allow things to be as they are. Because for me, the opposite for me, for not allowing, is I'm too caught up in things. I want things to be a certain way. I'm fixing, evaluating, judging, pushing things away. But there's something about the movement of allowing that it's kind of like opening the chest, opening the pores, opening the heart, opening the mind. And in that openness, that's where things can begin to settle even further. So receptiveness, allowing. So the Buddha talked about abiding or dwelling in states of concentration. And here also, one of the conditions, again, for becoming concentrated, there's two conditions I want to emphasize now about getting concentrated. One is the importance of relaxation. So to stay relaxed, stay soft. So if you find yourself getting tense or getting hard or forceful in doing concentration, it's possible to get concentrated that way, but chances are it's not a useful concentration. The useful concentration we're looking for in Buddhist practice has a very soft, relaxed feeling to it. Meditators will develop a lot of tension sometimes in the face, sometimes other places, in the neck, and on the eyes, forehead. That sometimes happens because they're pushing too hard, they're too tense in trying to get concentrated. So to relax, to soften, it's very important. Keep letting go. So I lost train. So I said I was going to talk about two things, right? Letting go, or if I didn't tell you what the other one was, you can't help me. Yeah, relaxing. Yeah, but there was something else. Let me think. I remember. I mentioned the word before, gladness. So the Buddha talked about the importance of having gladness that opens a door for deeper states of concentration. So gladness may be some joy or some delight. And so one of the sources of this gladness is when the mind is no longer caught in the grip of its desires, when the mind is no longer caught in the grips of its thinking. And you've been trying for a long time to get in the present moment, and the mind keeps wandering off, get caught up in all kinds of plans, and finally the mind stops being somewhere else. And it's no longer planning, it's no longer reviewing the past, no longer having conversations or living in fantasy, and it's just, finally it's here. It's settled and here, in the present moment and clear, and it's such a relief. It's such a difference between the mind that's caught up and the mind that's not caught. Some people naturally will feel delight, but not everyone does. And so it's helpful to hear that the Buddha says to avail yourself of the joy or the happiness that comes when finally the mind is free. Finally, the mind is not caught in all its concerns and all its things. And so if that happens to you, gets focused enough, settled enough in practice, very gently, don't make a big deal out of it, let yourself be happy with that. This is nice. Wow. Yes. Kind of like say a yes to it. And then the Buddha said that if you feel gladness that the mind is no longer caught up in things, then there can be kind of this natural unfolding, this natural settling further into these deeper states of concentration. So with that gladness, then that's the condition for joy. That's the condition for settling further into a more peaceful, tranquil state. That's the condition for settling further into a deeper kind of feeling of happiness. And then that's a condition for settling further into a real concentrated states of real concentration, deep concentration. And then with those kind of that momentum of this gladness, there's three words, gladness, joy, and happiness. And the fourth one is tranquility. And this letting go, this patience, this allowing, this receptivity, sometimes we drop into or we enter into some of the deeper states of specific states of concentration called the jhanas, the four states of absorptions. So those are kind of some of the background for it. It also then part of this also is having a concentration practice that you're doing, a specific kind of, and I kept that for last because I think all the other conditions are so important that it's good to know those before you hear about some of the choices of what the specific techniques of concentration might be. When people hear the technique, sometimes they jump on that technique bandwagon too quickly without getting all the other conditions into place. But so what are some of the ways in which, some of the techniques for concentration? It's possible that one of the most common ones in all of Buddhism is focusing on breathing as a meditation practice. And so just staying with the breath, and not leaving it, not allowing yourself to get distracted. If there's sounds in the room or other things going on, not letting the mind go to any of it, and just stay present. When we do vipassana practice, distinct from concentration practice, then it's fine to let the mind stay in the present moment but move around to notice the sounds or notice the itch or whatever else is going on. But when we do concentration practice, the idea is to corral the mind, keep the mind very focused and narrow on one thing, so that as we stay focused, all the other things begin to fall away. And here's an image that I like for this, is that of the bow of a boat plowing through the water. The boat has a course, it sets the course, it's going in some direction, and it's just going to go there no matter what. And it doesn't allow the water to interfere, in a sense. And so the water just kind of washes off the side of the hull and just kind of gets pushed off the side, and the boat keeps the course. So with concentration practice, we keep the course, we focus on a particular point of attention, and whatever else comes up, thoughts and feelings and sounds and sensations, whatever, we just let them kind of wash off, we don't get sidetracked by them. Just keep the course. Stay with it. So if it's the breath, stay with the breath. If you lose the breath, come back to the breath. One of the common ways supports for this is to count the breath. I spent years counting my breath. This is my early years of practice to develop my concentration. And the way that I counted was I counted from 1 to 10. And if I lost count, I would start over again. And it didn't matter. If I got to 2 and I lost count, I'd start over again. And then if I got up to 10, I got to start over again. So 1 to 10, and that helped me stay focused, usually. But this mind of mine, I don't know about your mind, can be pretty wild in there. Sometimes, once I resorted to counting to 26, on the out-breaths and counting the alphabet, reciting the alphabet on the in-breath, hoping that I would get to Z and 26 together, you know, to see if I was really staying present. And because I felt like I need help here. My mind was so crazy and busy, and even I tried to count the usual way, and it just went off, and I thought, well, I need to be more active and do more, just to make it more complicated here so I can stay focused. So this, the letter and the number thing, and that, it was kind of nice to do, but I did it only once in my 40 years. So there's counting the breath is a common thing to do. Some people like to focus on a very particular small little area, like a point. Like some people do the tip of the nostril, the air going in and out. Other people like to do a wider place of the breath. I like to do the lower torso usually, the belly, the diaphragm area, and that's kind of a wider, comforting, stable place for me, and that I find it very nice to kind of settle, let go there, and get focused there. Another thing that in our tradition that we use for concentration practice is loving-kindness practice. Loving-kindness practice is considered a concentration practice because you're focusing only on the practice of loving-kindness. Usually it's using phrases that you repeat over and over and over again, kind of like a mantra, a little bit like a mantra that you would say over and over and over again. So just you do loving-kindness and develop strong states of concentration. In fact, if you go to Spirit Rock, that's probably the most common way in which deep meditative absorptions, the jhanas, are taught is through the vehicle of these of loving kindness practice. Another technique for loving for concentration is developing concentration is the body scan. Some of you have done it. Maybe you've done MBSR or something. And I remember when I was meditating on a long retreat once. My practice was going relatively well, but I was a little bit imbalanced. And the teacher said, oh, you need more concentration to bring you more into balance. And he said, why don't you do the body scan? So it means scanning systematically, bringing your attention to the body, head, face, shoulders, you know, just going through the body one part at a time. And that systematic focus is a nice way to keep the mind engaged and help with the concentration. Some people will do things like chanting to help them with the concentration. Chanting is very helpful, especially if you memorize the chant or if you memorize the... Because there's something about the engagement of memorization that does a number of things. The kind of focus you need to memorize something is similar to the focus you need to be concentrated. You have to kind of stay there right with it. And also, concentration on memorizing something strengthens maybe the same mental muscle that you need to strengthen when you're developing concentration. And then if it's a nice chant that inspires you, you get absorbed as you chant. Do the chant, you get absorbed in it. And so by the time you finish the chant, the daily concerns are no longer operating so much, and then you're somewhat focused, and then it's easier to settle in, because you kind of emptied out a little bit of all the concerns. So concentration. So I think the primary thing I wanted to say today on this topic is the importance of creating the proper conditions so the mind can get concentrated. And so there's a lot of different things that are considered conditions. But the idea that we create the conditions, we don't create the concentration. We create the conditions, and then the concentration can come. So some of you saw the movie Field of Dreams. Build it, and he will come. It was a little refrain through the movie. So that's kind of we build it. We build our little temple of conditions, and then a concentration will come when we have everything in place, or some of the things enough in place for that. And so having this respect for those conditions and to take the time to organize your life, organize yourself, so that those conditions are in place that supports that to happen. So, that's part two of this four-part series on concentration. So I won't be here next week, because I'm off on retreat, and I'll pick up this theme in 2 weeks and do the last two talks when I come back from the retreat. So thank you.